It's 2:42 a.m. in Miami, Florida, and you're listening to Night Call.
Hello, and welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. I'm Molly Lambert in Los Angeles, and with me is...
Tess Lynch, and over in New York we have...
Emily Yoshida. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Got a matcha latte. Back in my zone. Awake, slightly more awake than last week.
I greeted Tess by saying, like, I've had the perfect amount of coffee. And she thought I was commenting on how much coffee she appeared to have had.
Which is not the exact right amount of coffee.
It's a real victory when you hit it, and then it's very easy to go over and under from there.
Oh, I went over the line on milk tea again the other day.
When will you learn?
I waded back in. It's too delicious is the problem. I need something like coffee that takes a little longer to drink. Although, very specific gripe.
It is.
I know the straws debate. Mm-hmm. The plastic straws are bad. I have to say that paper straws
are the worst foible. It's like,
they are,
you want to
drink
something
slowly.
It just exposes how dumb people are.
Like, this is my Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where, like, there's a mix-up with a paper straw. But, like, I am a person who drinks a drink very slowly. And
me
paper
too.
Straws have ruined my ability to do that because you have to,
You get 5 minutes
on a
paper straw.
You're in a race against the straw.
I went out with my whole family, and it was just so funny to see people struggling with their straws, with their paper straws. Like, it's disintegrating in your mouth, and you're getting pulp, and it, like, the liquid won't travel through. It's such a ridiculously stupid solution.
It's like a pixie stick. They just don't work very well.
No.
They're not very good as straws, turns out. But I think I might get a metal straw. Because of this.
I have a reusable plastic straw.
I refuse to give up my straw.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
I want to know
about
bamboo. What are the logistics of the reusable straw? Do you carry it in your purse and it gets filled with, like, lint and, like, bits of chapstick?
Great question.
I use it at home, and then I have a to-go cup that it fits in. So when I'm going out, I put it in the cup and then take it out.
Yeah,
and
I did buy a reusable cup, but, like, a decent thermos. I'm trying to use more.
I hate drinking with my mouth regular without the accessory of a straw.
It seems terrible to do.
Love a straw.
Night Call straws. Night Call straw holders.
Branded straws. What about bamboo, though? I'm serious. Is that just as bad as plastic somehow?
Seems like it's probably more recyclable than plastic.
I mean, yeah, you would
think. Bamboo grows faster and is a more renewable resource.
It's renewable. And doesn't it kind of, it grows like in the shape of a straw. It's already a straw.
Hemp, y'all.
Yeah,
just
hemp
a hemp. Hemp straw.
Hemp straw. Sure that will work
just
out.
A braided straw.
Also, though, we should all brace ourselves. If you say anything even remotely against the complete banning of straws, like if you're even dissing the paper straw, there's going to be someone who's very
well
upset.
It's just
listen, I'll take the hit for us. I think it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
It's one of these things. It's a trees for the forest type of thing.
It's targeting one thing and being like, look, we solved this enormous problem.
Right.
I'm drinking my matcha latte from Gregory's Coffee right now. I'm calling Gregory's Coffee out. They put it in two cups because I guess they were out of sleeves. So I've got double the paper, and then I've got a plastic lid on top of it. That's ridiculous.
Yes.
Connecticut
no, there's
muffin
so many,
would never do this
so many
to
worse
you.
Things.
Connecticut muffin.
Connecticut muffin would make you sit down and use a washable cup and say, enjoy your tea.
Hey folks, if you love true stories about extraordinary life experiences, we think you'll love the Risk podcast. Risk is the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share, stories too uncensored for public radio. On Risk, nothing's too intimate or too strange, like the one about the guy who got kidnapped by the drug cartel, or the girl who discovered she was living with a cannibal, or the woman who learned the person she was sharing kinky fantasies with online was her dear old dad. You'll hear real people sharing about life experiences so funny, so scary, so mystifying, you won't believe your ears. Find it all at riskshow.com or just search on your podcast app for Risk. That's RISK exclamation point or risk-show.com.
We are on a slow TV kick right now, I feel like.
By slow TV, we mean we watch things.
It takes us a year to watch
late TV.
Late
That's
TV,
what I mean by that.
And then also like at your leisure.
Yes.
At your leisure. Yeah. Late. Who's to say we're late? We're right on time for us. We're on our schedule.
Do you remember? Does everyone remember the NBC campaign? If you haven't seen it, it's new to you.
Yes.
No. Wait. What? When is that from?
The 90s when they ran.
It's from summer.
When like, they ran when they reruns. Have... Summer reruns. But that was the ad campaign. Was if you haven't seen it, it's new to you. Something I think about all the time because it's true.
Yes.
It's also how all of my jokes are that I try on people before. Doing them on the podcast. Or if someone is my friend but doesn't listen to my podcast, I'm like, hey, this joke.
Yeah.
Haven't heard this joke.
Trade secrets. We are all watching American Crime Story, the assassination of Gianni Versace, which was on FX last year, but is now on Netflix. So those of us, slash all of us who don't have cable, can watch it at our leisure on Netflix. I don't know. I was a big fan of the first American Crime Story,
yes.
The People
OJ. We all loved The People versus OJ. I think every episode of North Mollywood, my old podcast, was about The People versus OJ or the ESPN six-part OJ documentary.
Oh, yeah. There was, it's funny because it in some ways it feels like it would be redundant to have both things come out within a year, but they were so different. Like they scratched different itches.
Yeah.
And I think it's really, it remains hard to make the argument for People versus OJ as a piece of entertainment that's not pure camp, because I think that that's kind of how it was announced, especially when they were just announcing who was playing who. It was like, oh my God, like John Travolta is going to be playing Robert Shapiro, that kind of thing. I think some of that sort of overshadowed, and like the whole Kardashian stuff was a little winky in it, but also great.
Again, I feel like that show was less camp than I expected, because I was very afraid about it, because I was like, wow, what an interesting thing to do a show about, but also like Ryan Murphy, not known for his nuanced takes on racism.
Right. Yeah.
But then he didn't write it, so it was pretty nuanced and good.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's like, if something is camp, but you play it seriously enough, then it's like melodrama. And that's what this show that we're going to talk about is all about.
Well, I skipped it when it first came out. I have FX, but I didn't watch it because I felt, and also I think I had seen The People versus OJ, but then in The Assassination of Gianni Versace, American Crime Story is like its official title. I think when the family was coming out and saying how like deeply hurtful it was, I was kind of like, oh, I don't know if I can like go for this. Because again, like you think, it's going to be campy. This is based on Maureen Orth's book, Vulgar Favors, which I think the family had like denounced when it came out and said it was based on speculation and gossip. And like, I just kind of imagined how it would feel if
whose family? Cunanan's or Versace's?
Pretty much. So it was Versace's family and Antonio D'Amico, pretty much everyone who was close to Versace. And then Andrew Cunanan's family also were obviously very upset by it. And I think two of his siblings co-wrote a book that was like a more sympathetic version. I think I've heard, and I'm not sure that this is verifiable, but someone in his family said that he was like framed by the FBI and that he was innocent. I think it may have actually been his father, Modesto. Mm-hmm. But that was all after I finished watching this and was like, I need more. And there was a thread on Reddit about it where it was like a distant family member of Andrew Cunanan came on and was like answering questions about how the family felt about the series and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I went on the Jezebel podcast, the Dirt Cast, and talked about some of this true crime stuff about, like, where do you draw the line of, like, it being exploitative of actual humans?
It is exploitative of actual humans. Well, the question is, can it stand on its own?
I feel like the question is also, like, does it have something to say besides just, like, some gratuitous violence? Like, the Ted Bundy one to me is just, like, too depressing. And that's the one.
Yeah,
that's where I draw the line. I'm like,
are we just here to gawk at the murders?
Right.
Or are we here to actually, like, have some hindsight, have the ability to have the hindsight?
And I think what Emily said,
think about it.
Yeah, what Emily said about the OJ show and other things is, like, what makes the OJ show or the OJ case in general interesting is that it's, like, not just about a murder, it's about like a murder, and it's about like systematic racism and policing,
right?
Yeah,
and
the world the murder takes place,
and the world, and like this rich, you know, a bunch of different. It's about Los Angeles, obviously, also.
Yeah.
And so this murder, the Versace show, is about also about class very intensely, but it's also about homophobia and mm-hmm. policing, and that is what makes it sort of more than just like a lionization of a serial killer.
Completely, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was definitely like some of the more kind of redeeming moments. I loved it. I super loved it with no reservations, but, you know, I think the only reason that I could feel like it wasn't just exploitation was because it did have kind of like broader themes than you would get just from a sort of straight telling of it.
Can I make a request right up top?
Sure.
I have not finished it. I think both
spoilers.
Of you guys have. So I've gotten basically through the second Finn Wittrock episode, the one about Jeff Trail, who was Andrew Cunanan's first victim, I believe. Been also like very hesitantly Googling, even though it feels so stupid because it's like it's a matter of public record and it's all out there. But I'm like, I don't want to know what happens. Like,
no, I know.
Or, you know.
It's very suspenseful. And it's,
yeah.
We were saying like it's difficult to binge watch it as a show because it makes you feel kind of terrible
yeah.
and like full of dread
yeah.
and anxiety.
But the interesting thing is, as far as I can tell, is that I have now gotten through all the episodes with murders in them, which I feel like it's a very interesting dramatic structure for the show to top load it with the murders because of the nature of its going backwards in time structure. And so you get all that stuff first, but you still have a ton of questions about what happened and who this guy is and why this happened. So then that's the actual climax is like.
That's funny you say that too, because I'm like, oh, the top loading with murders is like Psycho.
Right.
And he's giving such a like Anthony Perkins in Psycho mm-hmm. energy where you're like, oh, this person's like a sociopath, but like for some reason they have this like, you feel sad for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, totally. I mean, I think Darren Criss is doing a very good job in this.
He's amazing, which
awesome.
Is not
everyone,
what I expected.
Everyone used to give him such a hard time when he was on Glee.
Somebody said something really smart on my Twitter where they were just like, oh, it's like somebody saw the sort of like polished thing he was selling on Glee and was like, let's lean into how uncomfortable
yeah.
that could possibly
yeah.
be.
Which you could probably do for every single cast member on Glee, to
yeah.
be fair. You could
anyone
like,
with
cast
that,
any of them as serial
anyone
killers.
With a theater energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are some great performances in this show from the most random assortment of people, like
yeah.
the OJ show,
Max
where you're
Greenfield.
Like... Yeah,
so
Max
good.
Greenfield. Schmidt.
He's amazing.
Schmidt fucking steals the show.
I have
never
say,
seen him
so
against type, and it was such a like lovely
took me forever to identify him.
No,
too.
If yeah. you don't know it's coming, because like I didn't know who was in this show. Yeah, you're just like, who is this amazing actor? And then you're like, holy shit, it's Max
Greenfield.
Greenfield.
Yeah,
he plays right. a meth head hustler.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
saved, but he's saved. They like make friends when Andrew's like holed up in this beachside motel before and after killing Versace.
Judith Light was so amazing as Marilyn Miglin.
Yeah. And who knew? I mean, people knew.
Marilyn Miglin is interesting if you've ever seen her on the Home Shopping Network.
Is she still on it?
I'm not sure if she still is, but she was for a while after.
I had never heard of her, and that is a whole interesting plot. Yeah, I mean, it just made me find out that I knew nothing about this story, actually.
Right. Well, also so Lee Miglin's estate, I think, like vehemently denies any kind of relationship that he may have had with Andrew Cunanan that was put forth in Orth's book. And so that's like another kind of family that's like, not
right.
A
without,
fan.
Without. Spoiling anything, mm-hmm. like what is interesting about this show is that it sort of deals with this like underworld of, mm-hmm. you know, stuff that people don't want made public, closeted people, and that he sort of took advantage of this by being like a hustler among people that he could then, you know, blackmail or.
Right. Well, I was like, I haven't watched it all the way to the end, but the feeling I'm getting from this first half of episodes, he's kind of like this boogeyman of gay shame in a way, like because the position that he has and, you know, kind of moving in and out of people's lives and sort of especially closeted people, like kind of sort of taking advantage, but also like fulfilling a need and in a way kind of disrupts a lot of people's lives. Like it's kind of different for everybody, and I just think it's super interesting. Like in this one, it is interesting because so far he's such a cipher, Cunanan is, but everybody else is kind of really fleshed out to the degree that they can be in one episode, like the episode that where he passes through their life. And you kind of see all these different shades of this guy kind of, I boogeyman is like the only word I could think of to like, to characterize
it. It's very talented Mr. Ripley also, just generally. Yeah. It's this idea, it's about class also, and this idea of like, people feeling entitled to a certain lifestyle and then being just like ruthless sociopaths to get there.
Yeah.
There's something about him where he like a talented Mr. Ripley type character. He just like hates himself so much that like the only way he can accept himself is by like having some kind of proximity to power or, you know, a higher economic class or something like that, or like some level of security that other people have. I was watching and I was like, you know, in some ways, sociopaths are this kind of person. They're like a one-person cult, but like the way that they kind of prey on somebody else's insecurities. It felt very, it was really interesting.
Also, they featured religion in really interesting ways. And Emily, I don't know if you got this far, but there was like an altar in
Lee Miglin's
house. That's super interesting. Also, we should maybe even talk about this again, but the penultimate episode, I think, where they kind of go into Andrew's relationship with his dad.
Yeah.
Is a really
when you get up to that episode.
I know everybody is like, just wait till you get to the dad episode.
Yeah. It's like it has all the strengths of the show, which is that it's basically an anthology show inside an anthology
show.
It's like each episode is a different episode in his life that tells you something about him and usually brings some actor that you're like, wow. Who is that?
Yeah. Yep. Oh, also, I have to say that, like, I had never seen the woman who played his, like, former best friend, Lizzie, who, if you followed the assassination, you may have seen her. She had, like, a televised plea for him to turn himself in that was right around when he committed suicide on, or, no, spoiler alert.
I already saw it.
Okay.
I already saw it on Wikipedia.
But she was so good.
Sorry for laughing.
It's Anna Lee Ashford, and I'd never seen her before, but she's like a Broadway person. She was really fantastic. Busy. But it's interesting because watching the whole thing, there's really only one person who was always like who was never wronged by him and who always was kind of loyal to him, and that's her. Mm. Their whole relationship is explored in like bits and pieces, but she doesn't get her whole episode. And she knew him. I think Wikipedia said that they met in junior high and then were friends for a long time. Mm. That's different from how the miniseries portrays it, but. I don't know. It was interesting to me because I was like, what's her deal that he never targeted her? And she seemed to have like no clue what was going on. Everyone else seemed kind of aware.
Well, gotta have one person in the cult with you.
I guess. He was the godfather to her kids.
Yeah.
Like, what? Oh, what a blind spot.
Well, going back to the true crime thing, Molly, like the fact that we were all like, spoilers, like, you know, for a real life event. Yeah, I feel like that's the one kind of tricky thing to do is just like, no matter how smartly or kind of incisively you're able to dramatize a real life tragedy or series of tragic events, you do like, just by putting a plot on it, like suddenly it becomes a thing of like, spoilers it becomes a commodity for sure,
or anything that's like a real life story. I mean, talk about like the Oscars were last night and had a lot of those. Yeah. A lot of
you guys want my hot take about real life stories? Real life stories are the franchise for people who think they don't like franchises. Real fucking
life. I totally agree with that.
Things cannot get greenlit that are like pure fiction and are not a part of a franchise. Like,
can you just do the Fargo where you pretend it's based on real events?
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Although
yeah.
actually Fargo is based on a real incident where somebody put somebody in a wood chipper.
Really? Just very loosely based?
I found it's like the first episode of Forensic Files. It's like famous Midwestern, I think, murder where somebody put their wife in a wood chipper.
So he used that as his cue for like the Herald I don't remember.
And it
how
was the
Heralds
same
work.
Thing of like they saw the blood in the snow and that was how people figured it out.
Oh wow. Also I read that Donatella Versace had kind of, I think she kind of stood with the family and saying, like, this is bullshit. Like, this movie shouldn't be made, whatever.
Said, this is bullshit.
This is bullshit.
This movie should not. My brother, Gianni.
Yeah, my brother, Gianni. I've been doing my Penelope Cruz as Donatella around my house.
And
my
She's great.
Like, stop. She's so good. And also interesting is that, so yeah, Donatella didn't like the movie, but then Penelope Cruz is like friendly with Donatella and was like, is it okay if I play you? And she was like, oh, sure. And then and maintained like, no on this movie. And then I guess like when Penelope Cruz was at the Golden Globes that year, Donatella sent her a bouquet that said good luck.
Ooh,
because of course, it's Penelope Cruz playing
you. Who doesn't want to be played by Penelope Cruz?
Yeah,
yeah.
It is.
They do portray her flattering.
I think that was a very like orchestrated decision there.
I also could not at the time believe that it was not going to be Lady Gaga, because she had just done American Horror Story and won an Emmy for it on her way to the EGOT moment now. And it was just so obvious that she should play Donatella Versace, and then she didn't do it.
Because I think Donatella would have been like, no.
Well, they're buddies, though. Like, I feel like it was around Art Pop or something.
She has a song called Donatella.
Because she has a song called Donatella.
I think she did a bunch
of photo ops with her. Well, I do think that her performance as Donatella would have been like a little more campy than
yeah,
Penelope
that's what I mean.
She,
the quiet dignity of
she
Penelope
got to go
Cruz.
Win an Oscar instead. Mm-hmm. It's fine.
That's true.
I also love the Maya Rudolph Donatella.
Oh my god! No, that's all. Yeah. I was thinking, get out.
And I feel like Donatella must love that too, because it immortalized her further.
I don't know.
Well, again, without spoiling anything about the show, but again, talking about like the themes of the show being kind of like class and striving and all this stuff. And they talk about the Versace siblings also. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm just like, I love the Versace siblings because they're siblings who work together.
Did Santo even talk?
Yeah.
For a while, I was like, oh, that must be Donatella's like significant other. And
Now praise Ricky Martin.
Oh, please. Yeah. He's so
Absolutely.
Amazing.
I love how like there's genuinely a sweet love story between them in the middle of all this. It doesn't feel like it's just shoehorned in to like be manipulative.
No,
like,
for sure.
There's like a complex like years spanning relationship between them that I feel like is really smartly played.
Right.
And it's so good.
The reason it works is because it has so much sympathy and empathy for all the victims, you know, like you don't come out of it like Team Andrew Cunanan. You come out of it like this is such a fucked up, complicated situation.
Yes.
And the police fucked it up so bad.
Yeah.
Much like the OJ show. You know, you're like...
The Lee Miglin episode, I have to say, was particularly difficult for me to watch.
It was a tough watch.
Yeah, it was a really tough watch. Especially considering how the family felt about his death and like the circumstances of his death.
It's so intense. And yet at the same time, there's this layer of like, wow, older actress Judith Light is getting this role of a lifetime
she
gets to like emote and do all this stuff.
Well, she was so good in Transparent. And it's interesting to see how like her career has kind of taken off in like this different direction
she's a character actress now, super strong,
but super like tiny, frail lady.
That's what she was like on Who's the Boss.
No, but I would say
she was a tough lady, but then, you know, Tony Danza had to do all the domestic labor. What
but
a
she's
great
so
world.
She gets to be so brittle now. I know. I mean, who's the boss?
One other thing that I really appreciate the show that kind of runs counter to how upsetting and like troubling a lot of it is and somewhat nightmare inducing is like, oh, those interiors.
Oh,
like,
I know.
90s interiors.
Well, it's
all
like,
those carpeted rooms.
90s
with, like,
Miami.
Smooth, buttery leather.
Yeah, it's very, very. Bret Easton Ellis-y.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Well, the room the lobby, I just said this out loud, like, while I was watching it, but the lobby of the, like, shitty motel that he stays in on the beach.
Yeah.
I just,
the
like,
Normandy
said suddenly, I was just, because it's just, like, this perfectly pink room with, like, tons of light flooding in, and I was just like, I want to be in that room right now.
That's also why I wanted you guys to watch it, because I was like, this is such night call bait, because it's, like,
it's such a
late 80s
show.
Miami. Yeah, it's the most glass brick show. Yeah, I really like this show. It's very depressing. Also, great music. That's what I was going
to say. Oh, Gloria used to the best effect I've ever seen it. What's it, Lisa Branigan or whatever? I know this because my dad for a long time would be like, that song Gloria, and we would think he meant the Van Morrison Gloria, and then he would try and sing it.
Gloria,
right.
Gloria.
But it's like he wouldn't really remember the tune, so he'd just be like, Gloria, Gloria. I was like, right, the Van Morrison. No. Gloria, Gloria. But that's one of my favorite scenes from, you know, singing in the car to Gloria. What a carefree murder spree moment.
What song would you guys set your murder scene to in a show?
Such a good question.
I have my answer.
Okay,
ready.
Go ahead.
Okay, go.
Oh, Sherry.
Ooh.
I've just really been enjoying Oh Sherry recently.
Because you've been listening to K-Surf.
Yeah, and it has that little intro, that weird keyboard intro where it goes like doon 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 doon, like a carnival ride is breaking.
Yeah, that's nice. Mine.
I don't know, Crimson and Clover. Can't go wrong.
Can't go wrong. You got to pick something that's like ironically upbeat.
I know.
The funniest thing in the movie The Snowman that I will talk about all day every day. Have you guys seen The Snowman? I talked about it on Molly Sleazy Friends.
Mr. Police Officer.
Yeah, Mr. Police Officer. Okay. I gave you all the clues.
I haven't seen it.
They had, I think, a whole Johnny Greenwood score that they scrapped and instead just put in some music at the end.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things they did is set one of the murders to the popcorn dance.
No.
So somebody is getting murdered with an axe, and it's like
the whole movie. No bad Yowzers. Cue for the popcorn song.
I have to recommend everything about. Everybody should watch The Snowman. It is the funniest, unintentionally funniest movie.
We should watch The Snowman maybe next week.
So we have a night email on the subject of two things we like a lot all the time anyway. This comes to us from Jordan. Jordan writes, "Hello, Night Call. My college was built in 1808, but there has been a Catholic church here since the 1600s. Anyway, we have this massive graveyard that's just chilling in the woods, that's not on any campus maps, and they just don't tell anyone about it. But there are also a lot of Confederate soldiers and Union soldiers buried in it since we were close to the Gettysburg battlefield. Freshman year, me and my friends used to drink cheap liquor late at night in the graveyard, which really wasn't fun since it was bloody terrifying drinking in the pitch black forest. Not to mention, there were all these wild cats that would just pop out randomly and hiss, causing much screaming and running in terror, just normal college stuff. The cats, every once in a while, venture around the normal part of campus, jumping out at unsuspecting victims from the bushes late at night. Most likely, the seminarians and the priests leave food and water out for them. Due to this, I am graduating with a very real fear of cats and a useless degree. LOL. Au revoir, Jordan." Ghost cats, guys.
So Molly recently saw a magical cat.
Oh, I did see a magical cat. That's right. That's how we were going to talk about.
The timing was weird. We got this email. No, the day it snowed,
it snowed in LA.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
We're counting it as snow. It was technically, I'm going to call it sleet.
Sleet.
Yeah. And it only happened.
It was a wet snow.
It was a wet snow, but it was frozen.
Yeah.
We're counting it. But yeah, I went into this store. There is a kimono store in Pasadena called Kimono no Kobeya that is cool. And I was in there, and the woman who owns it was talking about how her cat was feeling sick. So she had brought him in to come hang out, and how it was a lucky calico cat that looks like the lucky cat, the like cat that waves its hand.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, it's because it's three different colors. It's the calico. And so I said hi to the cat. It was so cute. It was really cute and awesome. And I'm pro shop cats in general. Yeah, and then I walked outside and got in my car, and it started like pouring rain that then became snow for about 2 minutes.
And you think the cat did this?
Yeah, for sure the cat did it.
I'm pretty sure that sounds right.
It was a lucky cat. I also bought many tapestries because I was like, what? I have to help feed this cat.
You bought many tapestries.
I just bought a tapestry
for your coat of many colors.
I bought a tapestry of cats and hot tubs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh my God.
It's great.
Emily, do you believe in pets having magical abilities or being kind of portentous?
My experience with like ghost cats sort of is more on the realm of orbs and photos. Like I've known some cats that just like don't turn up in photos very well. Like they turn up, but it's like they never expose correctly or something. Like there was this cat in a house that I was house sitting at once, and I was still using a film camera, and I was like trying to take a picture of it, and it just like never, the picture would come out fine, but it would just be like an outline of the cat where the cat was. But that's all I have really for ghost cats. I'm allergic to cats. This doesn't really affect my opinion one way or the other on
what about
them.
Ghost dogs? Or the movie Ghost Dog.
Or the movie Ghost Dog. I don't know that I've ever encountered anything that I would think of as being a ghost dog. Or cats seem much more likely to be able to come
what
back.
What about a ghost coyote?
I mean, a coyote is plenty.
Yeah.
I will say. Regular coyote is fine.
The hounds of hell.
I asked on the Night Call Facebook page if people had experiences with their pets, like seeing ghosts or, you know, being otherworldly in some way. And many people said that yes, which is unsurprising because obviously I know this to be true. I have like way too many animals. So I feel like I know that they are in touch with spirits, et cetera. But someone had a picture of their cat just staring at a place on the floor. Which has, if you Google, like, do cats see ghosts, people are like, yeah, because when they stare at that spot on the floor, what do you think they're looking at? It's a ghost. Someone else said that their parents' cats, I think, had passed away, but they still smell the litter boxes in, like, waves, you know? It's like the cat's ghost visiting. But I super believe in ghost cats. I was like, that's the rudest ghost.
The ghost smell.
It's just like spritzes its ghost like, pee.
Yeah, you
Hello.
Don't even get to like keep the like a nice memory of the cat.
No.
Just
it's
like,
very territorial
it
ghost. Yeah.
Yeah.
We used to have a cat who came by our house, like he was someone's outdoor cat, and his name was Mr. Kitty. And he was like a very, very smart, wonderful cat. And he always like, you know, he seemed to like come by whenever we were outside. But when we'd like look out the window trying to spot him, we could never find him. And he passed away. But then we kept seeing a cat who looked exactly like him with a exact same collar in our yard. Very weird. Reincarnated Mr. Kitty.
Oh, you know, my first cat was my parents' took it in because it looked exactly like our old cat who had passed away. We had a cat whose name was Bluey, and then this cat just started like appearing all the time that looked just like it. It was a black and white cat, and we took it in and named it Shmooey.
I really liked Shmooey the cat.
She was great, and she was a reincarnated version of the previous cat.
That's the thing.
But that thing, it was like she just appeared and like was hanging, suddenly came, appeared after that cat was no longer around. It felt a little bit faded, I guess. Mm-hmm.
The reincarnation thing always seems like the right tack to take when interpreting the meaning of it. I don't know. I'm like, wouldn't that be nice?
Would you clone your dogs like Barbara Streisand did?
We've already had an entire podcast where I've just said, like, if I had the money, I would just go out and clone my dog tomorrow. Like, I would just do it. I wouldn't even think about it.
Correct.
I've already signed the papers. Yeah. It's been done. But I would not clone my cats, even though I like them a lot. In fact, one of them I've had for like almost 17 years. It's the longest relationship I've ever had. And I love him. But I don't think he would want to be reincarnated, whereas I think my dog would.
It feels like cats will just like find their way back through the spirit world anyway, whereas like dogs might need a little bit of help.
Dogs, I think, are more often young souls and cats are old. I'm a dog person, just putting it out there that I
do. You're both.
Yeah, but I prefer dogs. You can go out and about with your dog, but with your cat, it's like neither of my cats would like go on a leash. I'd feel like I was putting on a big show if I put a leash on them.
I respect that about them.
When
it's
I see
a very
cat
different
on a
kind
leash,
of relationship. It's like
would
a friend
you?
That you only see one-on-one instead of like one that you go out to parties
Look,
with.
All I'm saying is would you want to be on a leash?
Look, this is you're tying it back to American Crime Story when Donatella's dress, where it was like, is she on a
Don't
leash? Is she walking
shame,
herself?
Molly.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not kink shaming, I said.
If you have thoughts
about... I said against your will. Specified against your will.
Okay. You don't know. It's, a dog asks to be put on a leash, FYI. Yeah. Your dog is like taking
me on a walk. You think it's consensual.
It is. Yeah.
Dogs are subs.
They look up at you while they're putting the leash on.
Some of them get their leash and bring it to you.
Yeah.
So don't kink shame is what I'm saying. If you have a story about a spooky pet that you would like to share, please give us a call at 240-46-NIGHT or an email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. You can also just call or write about whatever.
Speaking of creatures that may no longer exist but still are with us in a spiritual way.
Good one.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring to Creature Corner a new segment that is based on many other segments we've done about new animals. The Night Call's new patron animal saint, I believe, the tiny dino ero night mouse has been found above the Arctic Circle.
Finally found it.
There's a drawing that shows a bunch of dinosaurs, and then somewhere in this pile of dinosaurs is a tiny little mouse.
It's like Where's Waldo? It's so hard to see.
Yeah.
Can you even find it on there? I just took
your
word
for it eventually. No, this is the thing on the Life Science article. Okay, so there's like an artist's rendition of like the age of dinosaurs and dinosaurs running about and stuff. And at the bottom of the article, there's an editor's note that says, "This article was updated to indicate the fact that the night mouse, which was supposed to be scampering at its master dinosaur's feet in the illustration, is in fact not there."
What?
I was going to say, I looked for it for so long.
I looked for so long.
They were just
long.
Like, here's some compatriots.
Yeah. It's a mouse of the imagination. Again, a perfect mascot for us.
The mouse.
It was supposed to like just like kind of be, like it was almost like a parasite of dinosaurs. Like it would just like hang out around on their feet or something.
A tiny marsupial that lived in the twilight of the dinosaurs as well as in literal twilight for much of the year.
Mm-hmm. Cute.
They're saying it's not a mouse, it's mouse sized.
Okay.
But it's a marsupial.
And you just have to imagine what it looked like.
It lived 69 million years ago on the northernmost landmass of its day. Its high latitude would have put it in total darkness for 4 months out of every year, which is why it's the night mouse.
So it's kind of like an early mole.
Yeah.
Or vole.
But this is a marsupial.
It's a marsupial.
Okay.
So it's like a little teeny tiny kangaroo.
Yes.
All right. Now we're talking.
So it was found amidst duck-billed dinosaurs in Alaska.
Oh, I found the artist conception I'm going to show Tess.
Okay.
It's at a foot.
Oh, no. It's nothing like what I wanted it to be. Ugh. I don't like that at all.
Oh, wow. This is the first bad review of a
What don't you like
Sorry.
About it?
Well, first of all, the way it's drawn, it looks like its head's on like upside down. And it has like, its mouth is just goes way too far, like up to its ear. I think it's a bit, I mean, look, it would be better if what I think is a fern, it would be better if that were an antler. I don't see anything distinctive about this. I'm
eugenics.
Sorry.
Eugenics.
Yeah, I just had a little antler.
I'm against it.
That.
Then it would be a jackalope and I'd be like 100%
into
it.
Y'all are playing God.
Sorry. I'm not really into that night mouse.
I like how it looks like a tiny weird antelope with teeth.
I'm going to ahead and say that instead of that, I want the bumblebee bat. Which is the world's smallest mammal. I'm going to nominate that.
Somebody sent us something on the Instagram about a giant hornet also.
No.
No.
The bumblebee bat, which should be called the bumble bat but isn't, is like super adorable. It can fit. It's like the size of one section of your index finger, and it's super duper cute.
Aww.
And it's like
Does
the size
Does that include
of a
wingspan
bee.
Or just its body?
No, I'm looking at a picture of it hanging out on someone's finger. It's only 2.7 centimeters. It has like the world's little teeny tiniest little feet. It's so cute. And I love bats. And they also are nocturnal. So I'm going to go ahead and say like, I'm not into that night mouse.
Are we going to put up a poll on the Twitter and we're going to have the bumblebee bat square off against the night mouse.
Oh,
and we're
this isn't fair. The bumblebee bat's really cute.
The bumblebee bat should win.
Cuter picture of the night mouse, Molly.
Well, the night mouse is extinct. It's not its fault. Tess is out here.
Why are you even defending the night mouse?
Because I'm not into like looksism against ancient polar fauna.
By the way, the bees are back in town. There's a bunch of bees seemingly making a hive right outside my house because I set it up on the word got out. They listen to Night Call and they're like, the bees, there's this lady who's a fan of bees. We got to go all live at her house.
How are you feeling about that?
I feel great about it, Molly. I'm loving it.
Are you going to start farming them?
I've been thinking about it. I might. I don't think my neighbors would love it, but whatever.
They should. I mean, wouldn't that be good for them? For their plants and whatnot?
Some people have an irrational fear of bees.
What if they're allergic?
Well, that's the thing. If they're irrational. If they've seen My Girl.
If they've seen My Girl.
You know what I mean?
I've never seen My Girl.
You've never seen My Girl.
No, but I know about what happens.
We have one other call. And it's a call, if I'm not mistaken, about Flash animation.
Yes.
Okay, I just want to say that Strong Bad and Homestar Runner are probably registered trademarks of Mike and Matt Chapman, but I'm not making any money off of this, and neither are you, so, okay, here we go. You're like, oh, making a night call. Got the lady so excited that I might call. Dear Night Call, this is definitely really Strong Bad and not a guy named Andrew from the Facebook group doing a frickin' voice. Anyway, I was just calling because I wanted to know what your favorite mid-2000s Flash cartoons are. Please answer correctly. Okay, I gotta go. The cheat just came home and he's got the soundtrack to The Big Chill on vinyl. Ooh, that sounds so warm on vinyl. Okay, bye.
Oh my God.
That was awesome.
Oh my God.
Those.
Thank you. You know what? We had not listened to that first. We get a transcript of the call, so we're usually actually hearing the audio for the first time, which was definitely the case there. Thank you very much, Andrew/Strongbad, for the call. This is because of, like, I feel like it was a couple weeks ago. We were just like had an outro that never ended and then just started like quoting Teen Girl Squad. We were talking then, I think, after we finished that recording, just about like the weird era that definitely feels like it was a couple iterations of internet ago where watching Flash animations was like a featured activity on the internet, a way to kill time at your job, perhaps, or something you would send to somebody on MySpace. I was definitely a Homestar Runner watcher for a while, and not ashamed to admit it.
Oh yeah,
I think we all were.
Yeah,
this is a safe place to admit that.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Yeah,
I feel like we call it like the old weird internet. Mm-hmm. It's like before whatever this hell world is. Did you guys read that article today about the people who have to?
Yeah.
Scan through Facebook videos.
Yeah.
Emily, you posted it, right? It was a Verge article.
What was this?
Well, Casey Newton did it at The Verge, and it was something that Adrian Chen reported a few years ago, I feel like, on The New Yorker, but this was kind of a little more in-depth about the working conditions at one that's in the United States, because I think the article that Adrian Chen did was, I think, in China, one of these content hellhole farms in other countries, but there's one in the United States, so there's an article about this.
It's in Arizona, and they like didn't Arizona. Want anyone to know that it was connected to Facebook, but it's like some company called something, and then
Cognizant
the sit in cubicles all day and look at like beheading videos.
Oh yeah, yeah. I remember the Adrian Chen article about that. Oh yeah. Yikes,
that's horrible.
This is not that.
Anyway.
I wanted to say that my personal favorite, yeah, just when the internet seemed like a fun, weird thing to explore, mm-hmm. and not like a horrible thing that you're just trapped in forever.
Yeah.
I loved You're the Man Now, Dog.
Oh, I loved
my God.
It.
Yes. That was my time waster. that to me is just the perfect art form.
It is. Yeah. On the Facebook group, people were talking about both salad fingers and fight Kikkoman.
I don't know much about salad fingers, but my boyfriend always mentions
salad fingers gave me, I did not enjoy the feeling it gave.
Yeah, he described it. I think then some of that stuff turned into like off-putting anti-comedy, and that was what it lost me, maybe.
Yeah.
was Fight Kikkoman like the superhero, the Kikkoman Superman guy?
Yes, it is. Show me, Kikkoman.
I will never forget that song. It's so amazing.
That was great.
There were several brand flash animations for various Japanese companies. That was one, and then this company that has Rilakkuma and Son X. They had one that was Beardchan that had like a full length flash animation about it. That was, I swear to God, I hope it's still online somewhere. It was the funniest, cutest thing in the world. I feel like I watched it once a week in college. It was so good. I feel like there was one called Strindberg and Helium that was about August Strindberg and a little pink balloon that followed him around. My friends were into. I was less into that one, but I remember that being passed around a lot.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever do horror flash animation?
I could never do. For some reason, it was too scary for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I find that too scary.
What's an example?
All those scary, maybe they're just YouTube videos, but do you know what I'm talking about?
I feel like there were
an image and then something scary happens when you're not expecting it. Something jumps out and screams at you.
Those.
It's like, look at
but
this.
But those were YouTube. Those were mostly YouTube, but even I feel like there was something, and I might be making this up, but watching Salad Fingers, I was like, I think that there was another thing around this same time that was just creepy. Salad Fingers is just visually kind of unsettling, and it just doesn't make any sense, which gives you,
I don't know Salad Fingers. I never saw the Salad Fingers.
Salad Fingers was created by David Firth. And there's always kind of Brian Eno-ish music or Aphex Twin. I think he used one in the background. And it's like Homestar Runner, I think it started from an in-joke that he had with his friends where it was just a silly Salad Fingers. And then he created this kind of gaunt
Slenderman.
Yeah, a green Slenderman looking person.
Slenderman.
Who likes rusty. I like to feel rusty spoons. They feel orgasmic. And it's just, it's not funny. Yeah. It's just uncomfortable.
It's sort of funny.
It's sort of funny.
It's in that Mighty Boosh, acid trip kind of unsettling.
Just unsettling. Yeah, but I think there was another, but I can't remember what it was. And definitely let us know if you also share this memory or if I'm making it up, of there being a more creepy, more surreal flash from around that same time that would have freaked you out.
Yeah. Also, I don't think I saw many of the creepy ones, but yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, also wanted to say my dad confirmed Stairs on Planes.
Yeah, see? So many confirmations of the Stairs on Planes.
He said they're just in first class. There was a lounge
so rude.
That
yeah.
people in first class only could go to,
of
but
course.
It was upstairs. I was where?
Yeah.
In the plane. on top of the plane?
I'm just picturing these giant thick planes.
I'm picturing
floating around.
In the Flintstones, when people ride on a plane and they're on top of it in the world.
Yeah.
That seems I didn't make that up just now.
I was just going to say the one other thing that I feel like is, for me at least, the progenitor of the era of watching funny cartoons on the internet was the Fensler Films G.I. Joe shorts.
Oh,
which I feel like I feel like I poured many hours into, and probably all of them are just permanently embedded in my brain, the entire text of them. Those were it's all these things too still where I was saying I still have bits of a quote that's not even a full quote. It's just a sound or a word said in a certain way that will sometimes just be drawn out of me out of context.
Tess and I were both really into Syphil and Ollie, which
Syphil. We've talked about that before on the pod too. But every time we talk about old school internet, I'm like, but there's also
too, that
old
you're
school
like,
MTV,
right? Like things that existed right before YouTube that were this was made for YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
There was a brief era of things that were both on MTV and on, or felt like they were from that world, like Wonder Shows and stuff like that. But
yeah.
Yeah.
cashing in on that digital video craze.
Mm-hmm. Guys, before we wrap up, I thought of my murder song.
Ooh.
So I'm gonna go with Bulbs by Van Morrison just because there's a part in that song where he goes like, ha, 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 ha. Like a like, weird, sinister laugh, but it's a very upbeat song. And so I've been stewing on it the whole time, and now I'm officially going to peg that for my murder song.
That's a great answer.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Good job.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm changing my answer to be the theme song for Succession, which I think I mentioned last week, and which is still stuck in my head a week later. So that's going to be how I die.
We'll watch Succession. In my head. We can do a Succession
you don't,
pod.
You don't have to. It's
no, I
cool.
want to.
It's
now,
it's now great, but you'll have the song stuck in your head forever. Just be warned. Well, thanks everybody for listening to this week's Night Call. As always, you can find us on Facebook at Night Call Podcast, on Instagram at Night Call Podcast, and on Twitter at Night Call Pod. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes if you have not already, and leave us a review and a rating while you're at it. And if you want to leave us a night call, you can do so at 1-240-46-NIGHT or leave us an email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. As always, we'll be back next week.
Ghost cats.
Ghost cat.
Show me. Show you. Keep coming. Keep coming.